Christina Skull and Wayne G. Hammond are the editors of a newly published full-length fantasy by one of the 20th century's most popular writers. They're going to read the first two paragraphs. Can you guess who the writer is?
Once upon a time, there was a little dog, and his name was Rover. He was very small and very young, or he would have known better. And he was very happy playing in the garden in the sunshine with a yellow ball, or he would never have done what he did.
Not every old man with ragged trousers is a bad old man. Some are bone and bottle men and have little dogs of their own. And some are gardeners. And a few, a very few, are wizards prowling round on a holiday looking for something to do. This one was a wizard, the one that now walked into the story. He came wandering up the garden path in a ragged old coat with an old pipe in his mouth and an old green hat on his head. If Rover had not been so busy barking at the ball, he might have noticed the blue feather stuck in the back of the green hat, and then he would have suspected that the man was a wizard, as any other sensible little dog would. But he never saw the feather at all.
Wayne Hammond and Christina Skull reading The Beginning of Roverandom by J.R.R. Tolkien. Did you figure it out? In their introduction to the new fantasy, they contend that Tolkien's touch is unmistakable. And both of them are in the studios of member station WAMC in Albany, New York. Welcome and thanks for the reading.
You're welcome, Leanne.
What is it in those two paragraphs that immediately come across as Tolkien's touch? Explain.
Well, there's the blue feather stuck in the back of the green hat, which occurs in one of Tolkien's other stories about Tom Bombadil, but it's a non sequitur because he assumes everybody knows that a blue feather means a wizard. And Tolkien always likes to play with things and suggest things.
Tell us about the origins of this story. It is significant because it was written before Lord of the Rings. It began, you think, you're assuming now, when the Tolkien family was on holiday. And it did involve a son losing a toy. Can you tell us that story, either one of you?
Well, it was the summer of 1925, and Tolkien had just been elected to a professorship at Oxford. So to celebrate, he took his wife and his three sons on holiday to Filey, which is a town on the northeast coast of England. His middle son, Michael, was then nearly 5 years old and very fond of a miniature toy dog that was made of lead. In fact, he was so fond of it, his brother John tells us, that he didn't want to let it go even to have his hand washed. But one day at Filey, he put it down on the beach so that he could skip stones into the ocean with his father and his elder brother, and the toy was lost because the dog was painted black and white and became virtually invisible against the beach, which was all white shingle. Well, Michael was heartbroken, and to console him, his father made up a story to explain why his toy had disappeared, that it had been a real dog that was enchanted by a wizard, and it went to the moon along the moon path that was appearing on the sea, which Michael's brother John still remembers seeing during that holiday.
Christina, can you see the beginnings of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings and all of the things for which Tolkien became famous in this book?
Oh, yes, there are very many precursors of it. There are the three wizards, all of which seem to contribute something to Gandalf. They all have something of his character. There's the Artaxerxes, the wizard who enchants the dog. There's the man in the moon, who also occurs in other Tolkien works, such as the Father Christmas letters, which he wrote to his children.
And Tolkien's works, very many of them, tend to be related in some way. Certain details tend to recur from work to work. And the interesting part about Roverandom in discovering certain elements that seem to precurse The Hobbit in this was that we suddenly realized that here was something that would illustrate very well a transitional period in Tolkien's storytelling. Very early on, he had invented his mythology that became the Silmarillion mythology, the Tales of the Elder Days. And then his children were born, and he made up stories for them, which were of quite a different character. Later, he wrote, told and then wrote down The Hobbit, which led to The Lord of the Rings, which was a culmination of both the storytelling and the mythology. It combined them in one. And Roverandom, we recognize, was almost a missing link, that it showed him moving in his work from just simple storytelling for his children into something that was more sophisticated. And this was followed very soon by The Hobbit, which still was not enough for him, and it finally came out in the sequel to The Hobbit in The Lord of the Rings, where he combined all the grand mythology and the wonderful storytelling that he had developed in telling stories to his children and writing them down.
But of course, it's not only that he was developing, his children were growing older, and the stories tended to grow older and more complicated as the children grew older and could understand more.
You worked closely with Tolkien's sons in presenting this particular story. What was special about the story to them before it got into manuscript form, before it even ended up at a publisher's door?
Well, it was special to them because, of course, it was told to them. It was made up for them, just as the Hobbit was made up for them, and the Father Christmas letters, and so many other stories, some of which never were written down. It's one reason why Roverandom hasn't appeared until now. These simpler stories, if you will, have been very private, very personal to the Tolkien family. And also, Roverandom had never received the Tolkien polish. He had never prepared it for publication. It was something that was for the family in the first instance, and then for himself, because he got much more interested in it and developed it probably even after he had stopped telling it to his children.
There are some beautiful illustrations in this book as well of the undersea community where Roverandom eventually ends up. Were these illustrations originally meant for this particular story?
Yes. He did, in fact, 2 years later, which is the time when we think he was beginning to think of writing it down, he did four illustrations while the family were on holiday again, not at Filey, but another seaside place. So he did one in 1925 when he told the story, and then four 2 years later. And some of these he may have done at the request of his sons because they are marked on the back for Christopher and for John. But I don't think he gave them to them. He seems to have kept his drawings and paintings very closely and carefully himself and not risk the children spoiling them.
But the one you picked out, Leanne, the Gardens of the Merking's Palace, is one of his most beautiful paintings. And he did several very lovely watercolors around this time. Abandoned watercolor painting for some reason after The Hobbit, and concentrated mainly on colored pencil.
You know, people are always going to be dissecting Tolkien's work. You both, as librarians and academics, have done it. Were you at any point able to disconnect from your scholarly work and just read this as a story?
It's been a while since either of us has been able to read Tolkien except in the course of writing about him. And this is the unfortunate thing. You get to be Tolkien scholars, and you have to do this almost as a business. It used to be that I would read The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings once a year and had a great deal of pleasure from it.
And certainly the play with words in this, it's so well done that you can appreciate it when you read it again. You think, how did he just manage to do something like that?
Christina Scull and Wayne Hammond are the editors of a newly published full-length fantasy by J.R.R. Tolkien. It's called Roverandom, and it's published by Houghton Mifflin. They joined us from the studios of WAMC in Albany. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you.